if I can ask you this, but yeah. What was it like to come out? What was it like for you in high school, or what was it like for you in university? And what's the biggest thing that you've learned or grown from since you've come out?
Well, ask me anything, first of all.
Yeah.
Wherever it may go, I don't know. Like, I'm usually, like, pretty much an open book.
So am I.
But, you know, there's certain things that are always easier to talk about than others.
Yeah, 100%.
I think coming out is one of those things that is, like, bittersweet for me.
Yes.
Because it's one of those issues that at some point in my life I was thinking, like, do I even need to do this? Like, hasn't society got to that point where just, like, it doesn't even matter, I don't need the ceremony, I can just, like, be who I am? I was at that point. And then I think because we, you know, we also have to talk about the intersectionality sort of part of it, is me coming from a Chinese background. It's not so much that I have to come out and everybody knows what that means. It's even further, it's me coming out and having to educate and all that, because it's culturally not even something that's on anyone's radar.
It's not on the table.
No, it's not even it's not even there. It's like it's not even like anything that's on the menu. It's just literally, what the hell? Isn't that a it's true. Like,
I believe
they're like,
you,
isn't that a white person's thing?
What?
Like, that's how a huge part of it.
How,
like,
is that sexual orientation just related to one race?
I don't know.
That is so crazy.
But it's one of those things where that was a reaction that I got. Was like, and I think, how old was I? I think I was probably 18 or 19 when I fully came out to my parents. And it was around the time when, well, it might have even been earlier. No, I think it was around that time when I actually, like, said the words. Up until that point, I was just like, woo! Like, hello! Like, trying to do everything I could. But, obviously, no one was catching any of that bait.
So, they had no idea.
I think, you know,
they must have known as your parents.
Exactly. Like, I used to, like, dress up in my mom's clothing. Like, when I was a little boy. And not to, like, and I wasn't confused about my gender. But I was more just like, look at me, I'm a show person. Look at me doing my fan kicks. I was like, you know, like a showstopper.
You and I were the same. But, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
Mom's makeup, hair, like, you know, like, clothes and heels.
And, like, I was sort of like, there's no red flags that came out of that. But I think, again, in the kind of, like, Asian, Chinese sort of way, it's just like, oh, well, you know.
They don't know. They just hide it under the rug.
And that's all it became. But, yeah, like, when I was 18, 19, I think I was starting to talk about, like, well, do I want to move out and, like, move in with my friends in university and all that? Because I was just kind of, like, done. And I think inside me, too, I knew who I was, because I came out to all my friends in high school already.
Oh, you already came out to your friends,
like,
first.
My friends,
they all knew.
And I think that's very common for people. Okay. Like, especially if they kind of know who they are a little more in high school, they'll come out to some people that they feel really comfortable with. And a lot of the times, it's more friends than family. And so, yeah, I told my friends, they all knew. Like, we actually, like, would skip class sometimes. I skipped a lot of class in high school. I wasn't the best, like, attendee.
Oh, but I thought you were, like, a total Asian nerd like me.
I was, though. I graduated with, like, a boys' merit scholarship and everything. Like, I was pretty up there in my public class. Like, top head boy.
Yeah, nice.
But there, obviously, there was this other side of me that I needed to explore. And I was just like, you know, I didn't really understand. So I would go out with a select few friends who were very open and very supportive. And we would hit up Davie Street. And we would kind of walk around. And there was Little Sister's bookstore, which is still there. And we would go there. And
we went there together.
Probably at some point. But we would go there in high school to educate ourselves. Because there's nothing. Nothing in high school.
Nothing in,
like,
the libraries.
Counselors were useless.
Resources.
Teachers, there were some supportive ones. I don't know if they really knew. But it's not, you know, you don't feel comfortable talking to a lot of teachers usually at that time, unless they were, you know, relatable or younger or whatever. But yeah, like, we would just seek out older people to talk to that were gay and kind of figure that out for ourselves.
That's so resourceful of you.
Well, yeah. And I think that's, like, out of...
curiosity.
Yeah, curiosity about, like, well, if I'm going to learn about this, like, I might as well learn from not, like, you know, bad things.
You know, I wonder if, like, my high school has, like, books on that in our library.
You know, I think a lot of high schools do a lot more
now. Like, or online. There's a lot of stuff online, too, probably, by now.
But in our, I mean, like, I know this is, like, a very lengthy way of talking about coming out, but our high school, I think, was in 2005, I think, was one of the very few high schools that actually had a GSA.
What's a GSA?
A Gay Straight Alliance.
I love that!
Which is now, like, Pride Club, or whatever people call it. But yeah, like now it's like I think now, you know, they call it something like soji or pride, yeah, like because it's a little more
sexual orientation and gender identification. Yeah. A lot of people don't know what soji is. Yes. Yeah.
So we were one of the few schools that actually That's had very one, progressive. Which was so nice.
Yes.
And it got a lot of flack. Like, what? Like it was. I mean, it was the, you know, early 2000s, oh, right? Yeah. So still like, you know, not a lot of people that understood.
Not on TV, not in social, like, not in media, not in magazines, not in the hallways. Yeah.
No, not at all. It was fairly progressive. So I felt comfortable in that because I had people in the community in my school. So that was one thing I think that probably saved my life was the fact that I'm not alone in this.
Can you imagine if you grew up in a small town and you were the only one in the whole high school? It would be so depressing and lonely.
Yes. Well, and
isolating. Yeah.
And like just, yeah, to the point where nothing makes you feel like you belong.
Yeah.
Nothing, right?
But you need to belong. Yes. Everyone needs to belong.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always going to be, and I mean, this is part of the coming out part too, is up until the point where that I came out, I felt like, you know, I'm being honest, I'm being open. This is who I am and all that. With my parents, but there's this part of me that I'm not talking about. And I wasn't living in my truth. And it was one of those things that when I was 18, 19, it needed to be a part of me. And I don't know if a lot of 18, 19-year-olds nowadays really think about that. Or maybe people like even 18, 19 when I was that age think about like, oh, I need to live in my truth.
I need to be authentic.
Yeah. But I think that was something for some reason, I think... Yeah. That meant a lot to me.
Yes.
And so I don't even know what
it was part of your value system.
It was, And like talking to my mom when I was 18, 19, sitting her down and just being like, I have something to tell you. I like guys.
Yeah.
I think because I was so kind of apprehensive.
You were so scared. Because you don't know what her reaction was going to be. It could be negative or positive.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah, and that's something...
And you don't want to be disowned.
No. That was obviously on the table, right?
Obviously.
Like when I'm taking a look at the literature, when I looked up all the stuff online and all that, thank gosh there was the internet, which is a huge privilege to have
at now,
that age. Yeah. Like, but even at that age, I was like, oh my gosh, thank God for dial-up. But
dial-up. Get off the phone, Mom. I'm dialing up.
I need to dial up how to look up, how to come out to you. But like being able to go online and be like, okay, what are the stories out there?
Yeah.
And then coming out to her. And then the first thing that she said to me was, okay, so we need to get you help.
Like what kind of help?
Like counseling.
Oh, dear Lord.
Or like we need to see a doctor.
Yeah.
And
because that's all she knew.
That's all she knew.
She didn't know any better.
Yeah.
She was doing the best that she could as a mom at that point with the knowledge that she had.
And I was, I think, shocked. I think I was more like, what?
Like, is there something wrong with me? Like, what do I need to fix? Like, medically? Like, why do I need to go see a counselor?
Yeah, because everything... Yeah. But maybe it wasn't even counselor. I think it was just doctor.
Yeah,
because counseling, again, isn't a big thing.
So much shame. But you know, I don't know any Korean people who go to counseling. No. And I didn't realize that until I, you know... Asians don't go see counselors.
No.
It's a white person thing.
Yeah.
What? Like, thank God I went to counseling because, you know, I've been in car accidents. Yeah. I have anxiety with driving. And like, you know, I went through depression when my mom was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness for the support that we have for mental health.
Oh, for sure.
It's like sort of going to like the gym. You go to the gym for your physical health. Exactly. You go to a counselor for your mental health.
Yeah. And
like,
you have to.
You have to.
Like, it's all part of it. It's that mind, body, sort of all the connections, right? So that was that, like, that was like 18, 19, that happened. And then nothing really came of that. I think it was just a conversation that kind of happened, like the kind of me dressing up when I was a child.
Yeah.
Like,
just sweep it under the rug.
Exactly.
It didn't happen.
Yeah. And then next day reset, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was until I had my first kind of more, because at this point I was living at home.
Yeah.
I was, you know, like just exploring dating back in the day. There were Plenty of Fish and and what else was that? I think that was the main one that
Plenty of Fish,
and you know, I was meeting some people like online being like, oh, let's go on a date, whatever. And I don't think it was until I stumbled upon one person that I actually was like, you know what, I think I want to pursue a relationship with this person.
Nice.
I was about 22.
That
was when I was like, I was seeing this person consistently, and it was just like, I can't live this lie anymore because I can't just like go off one day and like not, you know, tell people where I am, all that kind of stuff. Because again, that is a no-no, especially if you're living with your
parents. Oh yeah, like where are you? What time are you coming home, Martina? Like dinner's on the table. Yes. What are you I'm like, stop calling me. So obviously something is
up, right? Like there's like, oh, where are you going? Like at this time of the night, where are you? And then like, I'm just like, I'm so done with lying. Like I just like, what is the point? I shouldn't have to lie.
Don't lie. You're in your
20s. Yeah, but the thing is, I think it's easy for, I think, some people that have that kind of like very loose kind of free range parranting sort of thing, but Asian parents aren't free range.
They're in your face 24/7. Yeah,
they're like consistently like, okay, where were you? Who are you with? Like,
how much did you spend? What did you buy?
Exactly.
Why did you go out? Why are you spending money again? I'm like, and I went to the movies.
So when I was out with this guy, it would always be like, when you're coming home, blah, 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 and I get like multiple phone calls. Where are you? Are you dead? All that kind of stuff.
Like, and come home. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't even know what to lie about anymore. And so I finally told my mom, like, I was 22. I was like, there's this guy I'm seeing. This is who he is. He's a banker. Uh-huh. He's whatever. Like,
oh, nice. Yeah. Banker. Yeah.
And it was like a big deal for me and all that. And that was, I think, when it really, the doo-doo hit the fan, because it was like, this is real.
Oh, so this is legit.
Yeah.
It's really like, happening.
This is real. This is happening.
It's not going away.
Yeah.
We can't put a band-aid on it.
No. And it was just like, we need to get you help. We need to figure this out. We need to fix this. You can't tell it. Like, you need to stop this right now. Yeah. It was all of that. And for some reason, when I was 22, I was better at dealing with it.
Yes.
I don't know if it was like, maybe just because I was younger, I had like, you know, better synapses in my brain or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I was like, all right, whatever. Like, you can take what you want. I'm going to continue seeing this person.
Yeah.
Eventually, you know, like, didn't you really hang out with this person that much? Anymore. We kind of fell apart and all that kind of stuff.
Relationships are hard.
Exactly.
Regardless.
Dated a few. And then I would say, like, and I would say, like, until Jake, again.
Your husband.
Yeah, my husband now. Mm-hmm. Big, serious relationship.
Yeah.
Again, same sort of, like, nothing happened from when I broke up, because I told my mom when I broke up with him. Like, my mom broke up for, like, 4 years, whatever, dated people in between, and then finally met Jake, and I feel like it was like coming out to her yet again when I was like, when I first met Jake.
In your 30s?
Late
20s?
When did you meet Jake? Mid 20s, like 25, 26.
Oh, I keep forgetting you're so much younger than me. You're like a baby. You're the baby with a Jake.
Little gay baby.
Yeah, little baby.
So, like it wasn't until then, again, like I felt like I had to come out again, where I was just like, okay, hi, so, yeah, remember how I'm gay? Yeah, so, I met this other person. And all that. And again, and for some reason, when I was 26, I didn't take it.
What do you mean? Oh,
like,
you didn't.
Like, and she didn't take it well either. I think it was like, okay, like now you're
like legit.
Legit, like, yet again, in another long-term relationship.
And this one was a special relationship, it was. Too. So this was more, it was deeper, special.
And I think
it
they're
was,
all special. Yeah. Like when you're in it, like you're like, all these are like, these people are special to me. How do I even give up this person? Like, there's all that, right? But yeah, like, and you know, I was traveling back and forth to, like, from Camel River to...
Oh, yeah, because he was on the island.
Yeah, he was on the island.
Oh, my goodness. Long distance.
Yeah. But, like, just having that, I think, on top of the fact that this was a gay relationship and all that kind of stuff, like, I would get calls from my mom in tears, being like, why do you hate me? What are you doing to this family?
No!
Like, you're making us all look bad. Like,
are your parents really involved in the Chinese community in Vancouver?
Not really. Like, like my mom's like pretty much a homebody.
Oh, okay.
And my dad is like involved with his friends and like the church community and stuff like that.
Like the Chinese church.
Yeah, the Chinese church. And all that. It's an Anglican church.
Okay.
At least I think they are. I don't know. Like, it's... Like she took it in a way where I was just like, it's never felt like this before.
Mm.
Because it was the constant, you're upsetting me. Yeah. This is abuse. This is all that. And it was just that guilt. But at the same time, like, I knew that, it, like, I wasn't abusing her. No. I wasn't doing this to
hurt her
or anything like that.
But she was internalizing it that way. Exactly. Or interpreting it that way.
Yeah. And for me, I was just like, I'm being who I am. I really want to. And she's like, yeah, but, like, if you're going to be who you are, it's in the expense of, like, our family,
losing
myself,
face.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah. And that broke me. Like, that broke me to the point where I remember being so in love with Jake, like 3-4 months into our relationship. Yeah. And one day I got like the worst stomach pains.
Oh,
and you know, like, mental health a lot of the time starts with stomach pain.
Yeah.
Because it's that gut sort of connection.
Your body's reacting to what you're feeling.
And I didn't know what it was. Like, it was just like this reaction sort of thing ulcer. That I had. I couldn't figure out. Yeah, they thought it was ulcers, like diverticulitis, whatever it was. It wasn't until I think like maybe 2-3 months later when I had to go get ultrasounds and they're like, nothing's physically wrong with you.
Oh.
And so I was like, okay, well, there must be something else. So I started exercising and I tried to do all that kind of stuff because I was like, maybe I'm distressed because of all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I started going to counseling that I was like, okay, this is a freaking mind thing.
Like, yeah, it's this like a process. You got to process it out.
Yeah. And it wasn't until I figured that out, but then knowing, okay, so there's all this stuff that's happening. I can't deal with it. My mom's never going to change, because at that point, it had probably been like 2 or 3 years into our relationship.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, when I became suicidal. And that's when I became... And very hidden, obviously, anything else is with a lot of lot of people in the LGBT community.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, I remember, like, walking out onto the patio that I had before.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, looking out into the city and being like, I can't even live in this space anymore.
Yeah.
Like, no one is accepting me. My family is like, there's not even that anymore. There's nothing that ties me to this this existence.
Mm-hmm.
Relationship is great. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But I remember just looking at the city and being like, I might as well just like climb onto this patio right now and jump off this balcony.
No.
And
no one should feel that way.
No. And like, what? And the thing is, and now in retrospect, I'm like, well, what got me to that point? I don't know.
Like, just the weight of society and expectations from your family and your, being authentic hurts my mom, but she doesn't know how to process it. Mm-hmm. This is all she knows. Mm-hmm. She thinks that you're doing it to hurt her. Mm-hmm. She's blaming herself.
Like, there's no hope. I think at that point, like, there always is, you know, and people are, you know, people... Again, it's one of those things where we have to process it as if we process grief, because we are grieving. Like, people in the LGBT community, I think, feel so much loss, and they go through so much grief through their lives, because they have to a lot of times give up certain friendships once people find out that they're gay.
Yeah.
They may have to give up a job.
Yeah.
They may have to give up family.
Yeah.
And all of that is like constant death,
right? Yeah.
And so how do you deal with that, obviously, at such a young age too, that being trauma?
How are you equipped like that emotionally or mentally? No. You're not.
No, not at all. And so I think having that, and then all of the bombardment of daily phone calls and all that about how I'm such a horrible person and all this kind of stuff didn't help.
No. And it's such an Asian way to do it.
It is. Know? Yeah. It's that guilt sort of tripping and sort of
thing.
Yeah. And like me being, you know, like me saying, like, you know, like, I'm not saying this to hurt you. I think I said this over and over. I'm not saying this to hurt you, Mom. Like, I'm saying this so I can be open with you.
Yeah.
So we can have conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, there is no mystery.
Yeah.
And the response, but the response was like, oh, well, no, like, you're telling me this stuff because you are selfish, because you need to make yourself feel good about what you're doing, and you're trying to make me feel good, but I don't want to change. You can't make me change.
That's so crazy.
And it's like, it's this whole way of looking at it that I think we need to understand why it's so difficult sometimes talking to, and I think there's a lot of stigma in even the LGBT community with people of color, is that it's not as easy as just coming out.
No.
It's not as easy as just like being like, yeah, I'm gonna live who I am, and I've come out, and suddenly the world is bright. Like, it really isn't. There's all this cultural stuff that's behind it that people that are white and queer and gay and like, you know, they have that kind of, they grew up in this society where, you know, it probably is going to be easier because you aren't a person of color, so you don't have all that other stuff going on,
that
too.
That cultural thing,
exactly.
And then immigrant life.
Yes, it's a whole different conversation.
Like,
it is, like, and like we were talking about earlier, like, the immigrant life of being you know, the son of someone that is an immigrant.
Yeah.
It's such a different experience.
Like, we gave up everything in Korea to give you a better life in Canada.
Yeah.
My dad was an engineer. My mom was a home ec teacher. You know, my mom's
doing this is what you give us.
Yeah. And you give us, what?
Yeah.
I'm like,
oh, and that's with anything.
Yeah. Right? It's so cray cray. Yeah.
So like, how do we move past that? Right. Like how do we move to this time when we actually feel pride about who we
and
are.
And safe.
Yeah.
And accepted. So I want to ask, like, from that time till now, has your relationship with your mom evolved? Has she changed? Has she been more accepting? Has she moved a bit?
I think she has a little bit.
Yes.
But not in a way where, like, people were telling me about it. And I think that's the worst thing that you do with any loss, any grief, anything, is to be like, oh, well, you know, it'll all be better. Like, you'll get over it, things like that. And this person will get over it. I don't think it's as easy as that. I think it's one of those things that we understand who each other
are. Yeah.
And then
it's still a battle.
Yeah, we move through our lives, right?
Wow.
So I wouldn't say that things are, like, exponentially better, but I would say it's to the point where she does acknowledge Jake.
Yeah.
I don't know if she acknowledges that he's my husband. She not acknowledges that I wear a ring on my finger.
Yeah.
And that I have to take it off when my dad is home. But things like that.
Your dad doesn't know that you guys are married?
No one knows that. Well, everybody knows that we're married. But I don't know if my dad does. I don't know. I wear my ring. That's the thing. I'm just like...
And they weren't at the wedding.
No, of course not.
I totally thought Kelsey's parents were your parents. They're the only other Asian older people there. I just assumed Kelsey's parents were your parents. I didn't even know.
I love that. But you know what?
I didn't even know.
If you congratulated them...
Yes, I did. They didn't see nothing. So I was just like, what?
They treat me like their son.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, but you know what? It's not only your family. Like, I know two other Chinese gay guys. Mm. One's in his 30s. He still lives at home. Mm.
That's so tough.
And they don't know. And he doesn't tell them. And they're all in denial. But he's dating other gay guys. Mm. But parents don't know. Mm-hmm. And then I have another friend whose brother is gay and still lives at home, mm-hmm. and he's like 45 or 47. Oh. And, you know, Christmas dinner, I'm there, and they're like, yeah, you know, he's gonna meet a nice girl and get married and have kids. And
mm-hmm.
I'm like, ah. Mm-hmm. So, like, if those two guys are still living at home and can't come out, it must be so tough. Like, mm-hmm. you're so lucky that you were able to come out to your parents, you're able to move out, you're able to get married and fall in love.
I think that was, like, my
choice.
My choice, and it was also
your challenge.
It was also part of my personality.
Yes.
Of, like, I don't want to be a liar. Like,
no,
I don't want
yeah.
to have
or,
this.
Or hide in the shadows of who you are
just
to make family life easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you want to be disruptive so you can be honest, but at the same time, like, I think it's so hard. I think it's hard to come out. I think you're right. It is like a loss in some ways. And also for your mom, it's a loss too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it goes both ways. But at the same time, I'm hoping as more people come out, like more Chinese men or Chinese women come out who may know your parents, it will become more normal or it'll become more mainstream for them, you know? So I'm hoping for that in the Chinese community in Vancouver. But it was so odd. Like, one of my guy friends asked me, like, maybe 10 years ago, hey, Martina, are there no Korean gay guys in Vancouver? I'm like, what are you talking about? I go to the gay clubs. I see white guys, Chinese guys, East Indian guys, you know, like Filipino guys. Mm-hmm. They're all gay. But I've never met a Korean gay guy in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, to be honest, I bet you they get married and have kids and they're gay under the radar because they can't come out to their Korean parents.
Yeah, and I think that's a very honest thing to say. I don't think it's, of course,
there's Korean gay guys in Vancouver.
Well, and I think that's not it's not just like a stereotype or anything like that.
No!
I think it unfortunately is the reality for a lot of minorities.
Because the community is so small.
Yeah.
You know? And like, ugh.
Yeah, it's not because they choose to do that and that's just like some sort of like fun thing that we say about them.
No! It's like lineage thing.
Yeah. It's patriarchal. Like, that is what you are forced to do
to survive in your family, in your culture.
Because the alternative is something that your family tells you is you don't even want to imagine.
No. Yeah. I know there was like one guy in my high school who came out after high school,
mm-hmm.
and and he ended up becoming homeless. So wow. his church told his aunt, we need to beat the gay out of him. So wow. literally the church lured him into church and they got actual physical Bibles, like books, and they were beating him with the Bible books on his back. He ran away, ended up in like downtown Eastside. A year later, the church is handing out sandwiches and they're like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And he's like, you guys put me here because you told my aunt that I mm-hmm. couldn't live at home if I was if I lived authentically. Mm-hmm. And the church was like, oh, like, when I heard that story, it just broke my heart because I remember him. He was one of the sweetest guys in high school. And I can't even imagine how hard it must have been for him. You know what I mean?
Well, and these are those things where you have to recognize that we, in our communities, especially, like, and I'm not saying in all religious yeah. communities, but in this yeah. particular community, they chose to do this.
Yeah.
It's not anything that's compelling them to do it, or any sort of yeah. it, of any sort of book or anything that's
yeah,
to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
It's their interpretation of what that religion is yeah. or whatever it is that is causing them to do that.
Yeah.
And the sad part is that when they see that tragedy,
yeah,
they don't acknowledge it.
I know.
Like they don't acknowledge that it was them.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
So like, what can we do as society now? Like, mm-hmm. like going forward from today and onwards, yeah. like, what do we do? What can we do? Like, I know Dorothy from Golden Girls, when she passed, she left her entire wealth mm-hmm. to help homeless LGBTQ mm-hmm. teens. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, how can we help teens right now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, how can we help people right now?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where we, like, again, into the conversation of allyship.
Yes.
Which is a conversation that I think is great. I think people... Mm-hmm. A lot of the times talk about being allies mm-hmm. and that they support the community and that they want to help it, you yeah. know, blossom and mm-hmm. become more educated and all that mm-hmm. for everybody else. But I think we also need to talk about authentic allyship.
Yeah.
Like, what does it actually mean to be an active person in the mm-hmm. community beyond just saying like, oh, I have gay friends and I'm an ally. It's like, no, you're not.
What
you're
actually you
just there to,
yeah.
to say that like you have gay friends, which actually doesn't make that about the community. It makes yeah. it about you.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, volunteering, mm-hmm. There's a lot of opportunities through community, mm-hmm. Which I'm volunteering with this year, at Surrey Pride mm-hmm. and Vancouver Pride. And there's lots of opportunities even, in schools as teachers mm-hmm. to get involved with like SOGI groups
yes.
and all that. And just education in general. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of programs that need facilitators mm-hmm. and a lot of people to help, you know, do some outreach and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like, that's what allies
yeah.
do, right? It's one of the things that I tweeted a little while ago, that allyship is not an identity. You can't be like, I'm an ally, and then,
like
pass out,
yeah.
you know, stickers
yeah.
And,
yeah, yeah.
And, you know, stuff made in China. Like all... Like, that does not an ally make, right? And also a position to
yeah.
say that you're an ally. No,
yeah.
that is not a position that
yeah.
you get paid to do or that you, you know, that you can write in your resume or say that you sponsor something. That's not what it's about. It's about the stuff that you do. It's a verb.
Yeah.
Ally is a verb. To ally, like certain groups together.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you're trying to do, right? And, and I think like you're the perfect person to do to talk about this
yes.
because like you are so active, you're there in the public eye. You talk about, you know, issues that are important to you,
yes.
and that's what allies should be doing when they
yeah.
when they actively seek that platform to be able to do that kind of stuff
yeah.
to make and elevate the people in the community to feel better and also be visible and to be
yes.
represented and to
yes.
be supported, not to make themselves look better.
Yeah.
And I've seen so, like, and that's what I mean by authentic allyship
yeah.
is there's so many people that I think identify as allies when all they're doing is to either pad their resumes or to look good themselves.
Yeah, no.
So that they can get credit for being an ally. And I'm like, if you're getting credit for being an ally,
yeah.
an ally is a place of privilege.
Yeah.
A lot of the times, if you're an ally, it means that you are probably straight.
Mm-hmm.
It probably means that you are in a privileged position to
yes.
be an ally. So use that in a positive way. Use it to educate. Don't use it to make yourself look
yeah.
better.
And humility. You need
yes.
that humility. Yeah.
It's huge, right?
Like yeah.
And I think that's where we get those authentic people is they're authentic people to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
That they're like, oh my gosh, there's this group that's in need. I need to help educate people and be out there grassroots level, get things going. Not like, oh, what do I do so I can like put this, like, so I can change my profile pic later.
No.
It's that kind of crap that like actually enrages me because so counterproductive. And it doesn't get the conversation forward. It actually leads to more misunderstanding of the community. Like when people are just like, I'm just going to make a big glitz and glam sort of thing and do an event. And like, okay, no, no, no. You have to think about like what the message is going to be, especially for it, like especially people are in an area or a community that doesn't understand that. It's so much more impactful to educate people about these are the stories of the community versus being like, look, there's this flag, and then there's post stuff everywhere. Like, it's not about that.
No, no.
Because people look at that, they're like, what the hell? Because they go like, because that's another sign of, this is them. Let's talk about them. They're so fun. This is their flag. It's like, oh my gosh, we are not in grade five talking about different countries of the world. Like, this is people that are in our building, that are in our community, and are suffering.
Yes.
Come on.
Yes.
Right? So, I don't know. It's...
Yeah, like go volunteer, go donate, go sponsor, like get involved, educate yourself, get on the internet and figure out what is this, what is going on, educate yourself, educate your neighbor, educate your family, and like realize like this isn't us versus them, it's about all of us, it's humanity, it's about just love and compassion.
Yeah, and like, we need to connect.
Yes.
Like, if we need to connect acceptance. To not just showcase things, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's like, how do we build and have the capacity to build capacity?
Yeah.
Versus just throw information out there.
No, encompass. Encompass and like, embrace.
And I think 100%. That's a huge part of it.
Right? Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, like I think pride is going to be one of those things that I hope we never forget the meaning of. I think it's to me, and I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for making this comparison, but it's kind of like, to me, Remembrance Day.
All the people who went ahead of you.
Yes. All the people who went ahead of you. Everyone that died. Yes.
Yeah.
And people that stood up. And stood up for something that they didn't agree with because they saw the tremendous negative impact that it would have on humanity as a whole. And it takes leaders and it takes people and that have privilege to raise up a lot of the voices of people that don't have privilege.
And that's why, because of those people who went before you, that's why you and Jake are married now.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's still people fighting, you know? And like it breaks my heart when you tell me, like, there's countries I can't go to and hold my husband's hand.
Yes.
And that's like, holy crap. Like, holy crap. Like, if you're that privileged to not have to worry about your own personal safety to hold someone that you love's hand, like, that's insane. And, like, I think, I hope that, like, day by day, minute by minute, hour by hour, we are making this a better world, a better life for those who are coming after us, you know?
Yeah. And I think I think the more we stand up for what's right and the more that people that are in the world can share that, hey, we are accepting.
Yes.
And the more that legislation, you know, moves forward and all that, the more we won't always have to
fight.
To fight
or be scared or be unsafe.
Yeah. Well, and also like one thing that I always think about is we need people that are visibly like part of the community and also that will acknowledge that they're part of the community to be in schools, to be in different sectors all over the place so that people and also kids that are questioning, especially at this stage in where we are in society, have a place to go, right? Yeah.
Somewhere like, safe to find resources.
Yeah. Like as simple as even like going to a salon.
Yeah.
I mean, salon's probably not the best
example
because I think, you know, for the most part, they're pretty open places, especially in Vancouver.
Yeah.
But let's say as simple as, like getting your hair cut somewhere, right? And knowing that, you know, maybe like when it comes to your gender expression, you express in a way where some people don't understand.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it, like... would you feel more comfortable going to a salon that was like super straight laced, everybody was like of vanilla color there, everything like that?
No.
Or do you go somewhere that is maybe in an area where you know, you know, is very gay friendly, has flags outside on their you know, windows and things like that, right? Like, same thing with schools, right? Like, and that's why I'm so, I mean, and everybody at their different comfort level, but that's why I'm such an advocate of, like, queer teachers that are out.
Yes.
Because a lot of the times it's not even about just, like, having gay kids or bisexual kids or trans or anybody that identifies other than straight to have someone to go to. But it's just that, again, the visibility, right, of, like, oh, there's people that are in professional jobs
That are just like me.
That are just like me.
Yeah.
And if there's anything that comes up, I can always reach out to this person.
Yes.
And yeah, because the conversation that you have to have with someone that you don't know if they're straight or not.
Yeah.
Or gay or not, or whatever it is. It's like you have that thing that you have to get past talking about before you talk about the real stuff.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with counseling and queer counseling and all that. I mean, like, I know that my counselor identifies as straight, but it was one of those things where I knew I had to talk about the gay stuff.
Yes.
So that was on the table, and then I could talk about the real issues.
Yeah.
Right? But if you meet a counselor or a teacher or anybody that is already identifying as queer.
Yeah. So much easier.
Yeah. You go like, oh, they get all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about,
like, their issues. Because they've been through it just like you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you know that the lens is going to come through something that's a little more relatable, right? Like, same thing with, like, people of color.
Yeah.
Right? Being able to, like, the reason I think we talk about this stuff is because we know visibly that we're going to be talking about some of the similar issues from a similar perspective.
Yeah.
But if, let's say, I'm talking to Jake even.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain things that we would have to
explain, like, to him culturally, generationally. Exactly. Yeah. Immigrant life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Same thing with the queer community.
Yeah. 100%.
And I think that's, like, these are all these issues that we've even talked about today that are huge issues.
So not only did you have, like, the Asian immigrant life thing, and then you also had, like, the gay thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, and it's like sort of like the cards are stacked up against you and you have to climb over them.
Yeah. Well, and that's just that idea that we were talking about with intersectionality.
Yeah.
Is when all these different oppressed, like, parts of you start to come together.
Yeah.
Right? Because if it's not the fact that, you know, you're Chinese, then you're having all these people say things about you, or kind of talk to you in a certain way, or assume things about you, then there's also this gay stuff that happens, right? And I think that's why in the last few weeks, like, we, like, there has to be this call to arms to protect our, especially our trans people of color.
Yes, because, I think that's so much harder
because
for them.
Yeah, because there's the transphobia, there's the homophobia, there's the you know, maybe card, the biphobia, maybe the race, like, all this stuff that are stacked against these people. And not
so
to say that people even choose one of those things to
it just
to
happens
do, right? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it, because they're already dehumanized for some part of them, everything else
just compiled and, like,
especially for people who are prejudiced.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean,
what do you do? How do you get help? How do you get the support? How do you get the resources?
Yeah.
And we need to make those available, you know?
Well, and again, people that are in privilege, I think that's where a lot of it has to come from too, right? And that's why it's so important to have allies that are real, allies that actually do stuff, and educate. Because like, it's one of those things I say to Jake all the time. It's like, I wouldn't be able to do what I do until the white person tells me I can.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is fact, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, I think people of color, we fight.
Yeah.
But until someone of privilege says that we can do something, right? Then it becomes real. And I don't know if that's just my skewed way of thinking.
You know what? I was so shocked. Like, a week ago, I'm driving and there's Korean music on my radio. Public Korean music in Vancouver,
is it
Canada.
Like BTS or whatever it is?
And I'm just like, what is happening? Like, never in my life did I think, like, you know, Caucasian, Canadian people would want to listen to Korean music, K-pop, on public radio, or, like, have, like, Korean food, like, Korean food. Like, I was made fun of for my Korean food in elementary school because it was stinky and gross.
Yeah.
It wasn't a PBJ.
But now that people that are in that are in a position
privilege,
of privilege,
like, oh yeah, say, Korean, like, food is cool. Yeah. Korean music is cool.
Now you're okay.
What?
Apparently.
Like, in my, like, I was, I don't know, I told you, I was severely bullied from K to 7 because I was, like, one of the only Asian kids, not only in my grade, but the entire school.
Yeah.
So, like, to have Korean food cool and Korean music cool, it just blows my mind. Yeah. And like, you know, now it's cool to be part of Pride.
Yeah.
Must be blowing people's minds over there too.
It is. And you know what? And I think that's when it's that, like, that's when we start to have deeper conversations. Like, are you for real?
Is this really happening?
Are you actually supporting us in our Koreanness?
Or is this just like a trend or a fad?
Or is it a fetish? Like, or is this, you know, like,
yeah, where is this coming from? Yeah. Through your
head, right? And I have those thoughts, especially about Pride, when I'm just like, do you actually care about the issues and you're like fighting to get, you know, kind of what the community needs to move forward because you're part of that community? Yeah. Or are you just doing this because it's
the bandwagon? Trend? Yeah. Exactly. Like trend, fad, bandwagon. Yeah.
And that's where, I don't know, again, I don't know if it's the trauma or what it is.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't have trust.
It's so hard
How
to trust.
How do I get that trust?
Because of the pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. I agree with you. And like, that's something that, you know, we need to overcome.
Yeah.
You know?
And I don't even know how. Like, at this point, like, I don't have any answers. Yeah. I love that we're talking about this today. And there's so much.
It's so deep.
Yeah, like there's so much room to grow, but I think we've heard that a lot already.
Yeah.
Like there's so much to do. It's like, but how do we start moving forward? And I think sharing these stories, you know, about coming out and about, you know, our friends and kind of how we perceive, you know, society and how it's changed. I think that's hopefully where we can start the conversation. I don't know.